Welcome to the Mama Bear Dares podcast. I'm Tessie.
And I'm Leslie.
And we are sisters-in-law. We're sitting in a stude today.
Legit studio.
And we're pretty excited about it. You guys, on this podcast, we like to explore what makes women, women. On Mondays, we interview these women creating crazy ripples within their communities, some of which goes out into the world. Some of it is just their friends. Notice them being really great mothers or really great friends, and we try to figure out how they do it and what we can learn from them. But on Wednesdays, we get to just explore topics that you guys have told us or asked us to explore, or topics that Leslie and I find ourselves talking about constantly. So that's what we're doing today, is exploring one of those topics.
That's right. On today's Mama Bear Mini, we are going to discuss a post that Tessie published, when was it? A couple weeks ago?
Yeah.
And it quickly went viral, was reposted in a couple of publications, and just really well received by her followers. The post was entitled, How to Survive 14 Years of Marriage, and we thought it was appropriate to discuss because Zach and Tessie celebrated their 14th anniversary in August. Mm-hmm. Jake and I are coming up on ours in December, and we love calling ourselves old wives.
We sure do.
Because we are old wives with so much experience. So we thought that this was the perfect piece to really prove to this world and all of the people who doubt us that, oh no, we can wear that title and continue to call ourselves old wives.
It is so true. I'm so glad you brought that up. I think we should also finish this mini off with a little segment that our listeners love. This segment, I feel like it releases them. It's like the Catholic confessional or
it's
something.
It's true. It's the confessional.
They go feeling
great. It could
be great.
Called the confess sesh. We have an obsessed sesh. We should have a confess sesh.
I like that, but I also like how we say things you should probably feel guilty about, but don't.
Right.
And this, so it'll be one of those.
The marriage edition.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we should do a marriage edition. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's appropriate. So, Leslie, what do you think? On to the show?
Let's get into it. So, Tessie, let's just start with the why. Tell us why you decided to write this post, How to Survive 14 Years of Marriage, and what inspired you to do so in the first place?
Yeah, well, you know me. Anyone who's been a longtime listener, as I like to say, even though we've been around for 6 months of this podcast, knows that I just crave that authenticity, right? And I crave the realness. So when our anniversary in August was coming up, that was the time in social media when the spouse challenge mm-hmm. was happening mm-hmm. in Facebook. And on the surface, I loved this idea, right? It was just like all these people celebrating the most important person in your life. Mm-hmm. Great. What's not to love? But because I'm an overthinker by nature, as are you.
You're here.
I just couldn't help but feel like I was needing some real talk, you know? And I don't know, Leslie, about you, but Zach and I are in the stage where, with 5 kids, we're almost always ships passing in the night. Mm-hmm. One of us takes these 3 to this practice, and the other takes the other 2 somewhere else. So I guess I just kind of wanted to write something that represented what 14 years look like for us.
Oh, I hear you. And I think so many of us crave that, just sort of real talk mm-hmm. on marriage. Because we talk about motherhood, we're getting better at, you know, telling our truths surrounding motherhood and womanhood. But yeah, we want to know what it's really like at 14 years of marriage. So I, of course, saw all of the spouse challenge stuff going around too and had some of the same thoughts. Like, you know, I loved seeing the celebration of relationships and could have certainly contributed to that. But what I loved about your post was just that it was very real and it was not necessarily, you know, wrapped up beautifully. but it was very honest. It's not very lovey-dovey, you know, and often, as you wrote in the post, it's not really sexy to survive 14 right. years of marriage.
Right.
But I love it, and I know you were really intentional about just the words you chose. And I don't know, I guess, what kind of feedback did you get on that title of, you know, using that word surviving?
Yeah. Overall, it was really positive. It was interesting that the people who were in, like, the first couple years of marriage were very much like, you know, I got a few emails and was like, did you mean survive, you know, kind of thing. And then I got an email from a church asking if they could change the title of
really?
It. And I was like, no, you can't. This is just, you can change. I said a few cuss words. I'm like, you have license to not
right.
use that. And because a few other Christian places asked to do it. And that was fine. But I'm like, surviving is anyone who's been with anyone for a while. This isn't mm-hmm. just marriage, mm-hmm. right? If you've been a friendship, if you've been a mom or a daughter, mm-hmm. you know, or mm-hmm. a father, daughter, like anyone who's been in a relationship can say that there comes a point where you do, you survive all the ways that the world kind of knocks you around,
yeah.
right? So I got so much feedback that like, yes, this is exactly what it was, you know, that Me Too thing that we talk about all the time. I chose that because marriage is so often depicted in books, movies, or on social media. Either my spouse is the best thing that's ever happened to me and it's all good and it's all lovey and there's mm-hmm. unicorns and flowers, or it's like, oh, this jerk does this. You know,
right.
it doesn't seem to be the nuance that most marriages have.
Absolutely.
This whole thing where like, I am the best of me and uh-huh. I am the worst of me with this person,
uh-huh.
right?
Yeah.
And so I feel like that was one of the reasons that I was just really, really wanting to write just real, like, this is what it looks like for
right.
us, you know?
Yeah, I love that. You do capture that nuance, absolutely. So one of my favorite parts of the post, too, was when you write the vows that you wish you would have written
yeah.
then, right?
Yeah.
So you kind of... You take, you know, 14 years later and you do what a lot of new bride and grooms
right.
do, brides and grooms do now, and that's write their vows to each other. So it definitely, I thought it was so cool that you sat down and you did this kind of exercise, and it definitely made me think of like, huh, what vows would I say now? You know, it's sort
yeah.
of fun to like yes. sit and think about
yes.
that.
So did you come up with any?
Oh, boy. Well, I didn't actually write anything down, but I did. I thought about it. And I think, you know, 14 years ago, I just was always so impressed and, like, in love with Jake's wit, like, his quick wit and
yeah.
his humor, and being kind of, like, that English teacher nerd. Like, I used to call him Mercutio, like, from Romeo and Juliet, because he just has such quick wit.
Right
and now. So I definitely, like, I would have for sure celebrated that. That would have been, like, a standout line,
yeah.
I'm convinced, in
yeah.
my vows to him. At that point. And I love his wit. I
oh, it's
still think
there.
He's hilarious.
Yes.
But I think now if I were, you know, to sit down and do these vows, it's not necessarily that that kind of gloss, like the way he can light up a room kind
mm-hmm.
of. It's still there. But
right.
what I really, really love about him and have grown to love over the years is just how steady he is.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's a very reliable, steadfast person. And I didn't know that that would be so crucial
right.
back then. Like,
right.
that almost is boring
yeah.
when you're
yes.
24 and
yes.
standing at the altar. You don't necessarily want to value that.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, that's what I would want to highlight now is just through all of the moves, all of the good times, all of the new kids, all of the bad times, all of the new jobs, things like that.
Yeah.
Like, I really have grown to appreciate not his flashy humor, but his steadfast character, really.
Yeah. And I mean, Jake and Zach are so similar. So I think mine would have been, Zach wanted us to write vows, but mm-hmm. I knew, I'm a crier, clearly, obviously, and I knew I would just bawl through them, so I'm like, no, this is a waste of time, I'm not going to actually vocalize anything I say up there, but they would have been, it would have been about his humor, it would have been about his eyes, and
mm-hmm.
his body, and
mm-hmm.
his, you know, his love of sports, or whatever, it would have been things that really, in hindsight, a lot of people could have offered me,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
But just like you said, there's no way to predict, as a 20-year-old that we were, that I fall the maddest in love with him when he's around our nieces and nephews.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's no way I could have known that the way he reacts, and as a camp director, just random stranger kid, you know, like the way he is around kids is unbelievable. Yeah. And I never could have predicted that that was going to be one of the things that showed me time and again that he's just a good, you know, just steady person.
Oh. Yeah.
And this is not something, again, as 20-year-olds, where I would have been like, I just can't wait to see him with strange children and my nieces and nephews, you know? There's no way.
Right. You don't know that.
Yeah.
That's so true. And I guess I love just that theme of what you thought you would always love about your spouse, but it turns into something completely different. You know, you're 14 years in. And you never would have guessed what those qualities were or what those qualities are. So we were at a wedding, you know, last month, and you look at that bride and groom, right? Like, doesn't it happen to you every time you see this new couple? You just, you want to impart this wisdom. Maybe it's only what old wives do. I'm not sure.
Since we are.
But, you know, you just want to tell them how you're enamored with each other now for certain characteristics and certain traits, but, like, later on, it's going to be these really minute, small things that you're just going to, it's going to be what keeps you afloat. Like the way that, you know, they know exactly what, how you like your coffee or your cocktail or whatever it is. It just, it feels so good after living life together over the years to just really feel like you're known by that person. And those things surface in the smallest details.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, that's just it, right? Is that we talked about this in the Let's Talk About Sex, Baby, the Horizontal Tango episode we can link to in the show notes in case you guys missed that. But just like in the beginning, what was sexy was like maybe they gave you a look over the table and you're like, "That, let's go.
The come let's hither.
The come hither, right? And now it's like, did you put away those that laundry? Oh my gosh. It's the same thing, right? No way could you tell a 20-year-old that that was going to be the sexiest thing you've seen. But you do, right? And I think that was one of my favorite things about writing the piece was just sitting down and really listing what I've learned about our love and our marriage in 14 years. And I don't think we create the space. We talk about that all the time for lots of things. But really with marriage, it's so hard to create the space, especially if you're in that time where you feel really disconnected or you feel if there's anger or resentment at all, it's even more important to create that space, right? If you are ships passing in the night, but we don't do it. We're not active about that. Mm-hmm. And so it was just really good to sit down, create that space, and just think about how far we've come, what we've had to overcome, and how we've done it together. You know, that was just such a good practice.
Yeah, definitely. I love that. It just, it does. It takes that intentionality and that kind of focus that we so often, you know, lack. And it's just about being purposeful and really setting aside, like you said, just the time to do that.
Mm-hmm. When you do that, sometimes you discover, like, oh, we need to have some conversations, like something bubbles up and you're like, this needs a real conversation or this needs some therapy or whatever. Like if answers don't come in the quiet, if that sort of thing doesn't happen, then there is obviously those moments where you need more than that. But I think we can all agree that it's just way too easy, especially if you have kids, especially depending on no matter what the age. I mean, I was just with my brother and sister and they have 3 under 5. They are, you know, like they're not taking any time to do this. And neither are we when our kids are not that young, you know? So like, no matter what age, it's really, really hard to find that time. And it's just so much easier to ignore the little twinges of something telling us, hey, this might not be right. Or, but when you sit down to, especially like, this is why I love writing. And I know you do too. Like we've talked about how sometimes we don't even know how we feel about a thing until we start writing about the thing.
Right.
And that was how it was, right? Because I had to slow down, become really reflective. And for anyone else, whether you blog about it, whether you don't ever publish it, whether it's just a journal, like the things come bubbling up. Anything that you've been suppressing, things you need to ask for forgiveness for, things you need, you know, all of that comes to the surface. And I, you know, I both love and hate that. I love and I hate that.
Well, that's right. I mean, I don't think, I think growth is always a little bit painful, you know? And so anytime you're learning something new, like it's not going to be easy, you know? You're going to come face to face with some things you'd rather, you know, push back down or put back in the drawer. So I totally get that. But another thing I wanted to talk about when I read your post, you write about how American culture can be really hard on marriage. And I hadn't necessarily ever put those pieces together. I think I understand how American culture can be really hard on people of color or on people that are women. but, you know, marriage in general, like we've kind of framed it as this sort of ultimate institution. And so I would love to hear just more about how you kind of broke that down in the article for our listeners and just more thoughts on that. Because I thought that was a great, great piece of what you included.
You know, you and I talk a lot on this podcast and with just each other about embracing countercultural living, period. Whether that means you don't buy as much stuff, whether that means you're, you know, plant-based. Like, there's a lot of ways that you can be countercultural. When I sat down, I was thinking about the things that we struggle with the most that I couldn't have ever seen are really within the fabric of our country, right? This patriarchy that celebrates this man who doesn't feel things. He just goes to work, he comes home, and he leaves the feelings to the women, you know? Mm-hmm. Our father-in-law is actually a very emotional man in terms of, like, we've seen him cry. Mm-hmm. He's constantly telling us he loves us. Like, this is not a man who is really closed off. So it's not like they were watching someone who never showed his emotions, never said, I love you. This was not, but it does, then it shows that it's actually a larger cultural thing.
Sure.
Right. Whereas with someone who had a dad like that, maybe you could just kind of almost blame the dad. We couldn't really do that here. I'm like, this is an American thing.
Yeah.
This is a common thing with a lot of the women I was doing, is just that, like, sometimes you feel like your husband is closing off. Mm-hmm. And then also the thing that I was like, well, how does that patriarchy then play out in me? Well, it's this martyr complex, because in patriarchy, the man is supposed to go to work and just do that. And then the woman does everything else.
Right.
Well, the problem is then, like, when you're working like we are, or even when you're not and you're staying at home, that's too much.
Right.
It's too much for today's life.
And then the martyr, you mean, like, then you start resenting.
Then you start resenting.
Resentful.
Yes. Like, why aren't you helping out? I haven't asked for help, but why aren't you just offering it?
Yes.
Or, you know, I haven't asked you to clean that up, but why aren't you just doing all those things where I've seen this play out. I'm sure you have in almost every relationship, every female, that this is a struggle that I have all the time. Like, I just look around and, like, why aren't you guys thanking me constantly?
Don't you see how I am breaking my back every day? No.
But it feels like that, right? And also just that America, I mean, it celebrates independence.
Mm-hmm.
That's a constant thing, is like, pick yourself up by your bootstraps. Do whatever you can to get the two cars and the beautiful house and the this and the that and the other. And I know for us, if my husband was so focused on that, it would never work, because I want him home at a decent time.
Uh-huh.
I want to have dinner with him. I want to look across the table at him. And you and I have friends who have the opposite, and it works for them. But I know for my marriage, this is what we need, right?
Yeah.
And that's not very American.
Right, it is. You're right. It's countercultural. And just that idea of interdependency, like that being really important in marriage, and whereas our country doesn't talk about needing one another. It needs the individual, and that's all you need. And I completely agree. And Jake and I talk about that a lot, because it's unique to your own marriage. So as you were saying, you know, we have friends, they have great marriages, but the wife or the husband is a pilot and gone forever, but it works for them. Like the wife is good with that. Or like you were saying, the partners who work really long hours, but they've found this way that they can go on happily living and existing. So it is really unique to you. And it's really important to figure out what you want, not what everyone else is doing, or not what marriage looks like in America or how it's portrayed on television, but what works for you. Just because your marriage might look different than your best friend's, it doesn't mean that one of you is wrong and the other one is right. It's just where, you know, you got to figure it out. We're all unique humans just trying to navigate this thing.
Yeah. And I was also thinking about the fact that on that same note, too often we let too many people tell us what a good marriage looks like or what a solid marriage looks like, or that this needs to be valued. Money needs to be valued more than time or whatever. But that might not be true of you. So again, you need to create space to figure out what your value is. Check in with your husband, see what his value is, and then create that family value.
Yeah.
And I don't think we do that enough. It's just so easy to look at what your best friend's doing. They seem happy. Let's do that.
Yeah.
You know? And I think that's where stuff starts to bubble up, where you're just like, oh, on the surface, we should be great.
Right.
We have everything that we're supposed to want, but why does it feel so crappy? And that might be why, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. So I hear what you're saying. How would you say that that really plays out practically for you guys?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want anyone to hear like, oh, they know their family values and they stick to it, because we both will go on this thing where like we'll both go on a buying binge, and buying binge for us means like I'll buy 22 books and he'll buy a skateboard or something, you know. I mean, it looks different in everybody's, but we'll just kind of pull back and be like, none of that made us happy. Mm-hmm. Let's come back. We're obviously searching for something else, you know. And so we'll go on these buying binges and be like, that's not the ethos of our family. Our family is like, we want to spend that money on trips, or we want to spend that money on family outings, mm-hmm. or whatever. But it's that pulling back and then reestablishing what your family value is.
Yeah. And that it is hard when you're not seeing each other a lot, or when you're so busy with so many other mm-hmm. things, which in itself is really a value too. It's just how busy do you want to let yourself be? And I am the worst person to offer any advice on that. But you also write in this essay about the alpha male thing that happens in America, and how really much of the world celebrates that, and how hard that can be when you're trying to navigate a marriage.
Yeah.
So you and I talk about this all the time because we married brothers.
Yeah.
Right? Yes. And they were raised in the same country, in the same house, with the same exact family structure.
Yeah.
And honestly, they're a little more emotionally available than probably a whole lot of alpha males out there.
So, sure.
You know, I think this is our experience, and that's unique to the sort of family that we married into. But I do think that our spouses and so many others struggle with identifying and then talking about their feelings. Mm-hmm. And again, I think it's another symptom of our culture.
Yes, for sure.
So I've noticed over the years that when Jake struggles with something, especially about work, it's, you know, until he has settled it in his soul or intellectually, he doesn't want to talk about mm-hmm. it. He emotes tension. Mm-hmm. And I can tell something's bothering him, but he'll often only want to discuss it when he has felt some sort of resolution. And just so you know, listeners, I have asked Jake for permission to discuss this. So I don't feel like I'm betraying, you know, him at all by saying that. But it's definitely a tricky thing how emotions are handled by the American male.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, we've talked about it here and I mentioned it again, but like you and I are feelers. Mm-hmm. We are just feelers. And we started a podcast, so clearly we like to talk about all the taints before we've had any sort of resolution or conceptually figured out what's going on. We like to figure it out in real time, right? Our husbands, again, Zach and I have talked about this too. Our husbands, they've worked hard on this. This is a thing that, because, again, and we're raising young men. Mm-hmm. And so I know for both of us, we like to really try to be intentional about like, hey, I can tell you're feeling something.
Right.
Do you know what it is? Have you figured it out yet? Have you taken a second to figure out what it is? Can you share it with me? What are you feeling? Mm-hmm. Your feelings are okay. You know, we've tried to mirror that because, of course, our husbands are in their 30s. Like, it's so hard to unlearn some behavior that has been with you since the beginning, right? Since in utero.
Yeah.
So this is not, I totally agree that this is not unique to them, especially because it's clear that they've worked on this. Like last time we were in Davenport together, the four of us, the brothers and then us, sat on your porch for hours, hours with our green smoothies and our coffees talking about all of this, right?
Yeah.
And I don't know, maybe any other men who would be willing to do that.
I don't know that they loved all of the 4 hours of the talking.
Zach actually crawled into his hood. That's true. Got a little intense. But again, this is 14 years in the making. This is 14 years of us saying, I want to know what's going on. Mm-hmm. I'm strong enough to handle any of your doubts, any of your fears, any of your, you know, because I think that's our role as women, is that sometimes let's be real. It's scary if our husbands especially are the main income.
Right.
And they say, I don't like my job. I'm scared I'll get fired.
Right.
I want to quit. We can't be like, no, just swallow it up. Go to work.
That was like for a stretch of time when Jake would come home from work, he'll be like, oh my God, did you get fired today? Like he just came home and what terrible pressure he must have felt when I was just like, oh my God, you got fired. And you no foundational basis for these. But I mean, think of what that puts on them.
Right.
So you're right. Like that is our role. That is what we need to try to figure out.
Yes. Because I think it's important to know that there's always patriarchy and then there's the underbelly of it.
Mm-hmm.
So that can be working in them, but how is it working in you? It's always working in you too. You can't control any of their behavior. You can ask them to keep expressing that, but like, what can you do to bring that out? Well, you can just not be scared. what they're going to say,
good point.
You know?
So good.
And I was like, that was essentially our first 8 years of marriage was him saying things like that or him getting like really closed off because he's scared to tell me it.
Right.
And then we're not talking. And then I go into big martyr complex and super pissed that he's not, you know, it's this ball of emotion where it's like there were many years like that. And it's taken us so long. And we still, let's be real.
Right.
I mean, it's like you don't get it figured out and then you're perfect.
No.
You slip back into it. But this is what I loved about sitting down to think about it, was just like, oh, we have come so far from being able to tell each other and trust each other with what we're feeling, the doubts, the fears, all of that.
I love what you said about that kind of the patriarchy and then the underbelly of patriarchy.
Uh-huh.
And so I think that so many of us, it's unique to us that we do become these sort of martyrs. And you mentioned that before, and you mentioned it in the, you know, this idea in the essay. So let's talk a little bit more about that, because I do think that it's just prevalent. Like, we fall into this trap. It's like this American work ethos, or this, like, I don't know if it's like our agrarian background of, like, you know, everybody works hard and we don't complain about it kind of thing. I'm not sure what it is, but I know it's huge. And, you know, it's a new world now in a lot of ways. And I think that, you know, we are able and honestly, we should almost be required to kind of get over that martyr syndrome and ask for help.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because I think especially in marriage, that martyrdom, like that can be toxic. It takes your joy. It steals your joy.
Yes.
And I think we could really do ourselves a favor and do our husbands or spouses or wives a favor by simply delegating and being okay with it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And don't you think it's because I think we have this idea of like what a marriage used to be, whatever, but like understand that in this moment, in this time, more is required of families in general than ever before.
Mm.
So even if you're a stay-at-home mom and your husband works and then comes home and say it looks on the surface very 1950s, in 1950s, they didn't have all these activities to go to after school. They didn't have all this pressure to like eat organic and do all, you know, have
oh my home. Gosh.
So,
yes.
So remember that this is a new age. Mm-hmm. So I think you're so right. Like, listen to us old wives.
Step one.
If you're not at 14 years, or if you are at 14 years, if you're at 30 years and you're like, oh, I've never evaluated whether that's at play in our marriage, like that's step one.
Right. Or I haven't evaluated it for 2 weeks because probably a lot has changed, you know? Like,
yeah.
Get back in there. Let's check in here.
Exactly. Because I think you're right that the martyrdom specifically is just a slow poison.
It is.
You don't notice it's happening. It's the little things. You'll have a day where you kill it. You've had those days, right? Like, you get caught up on laundry, you pick up the house, you do some work, you get home, and then, like, your husband leaves a plate out. Right? Slow poison.
Sizzle, sizzle, sizzle. The fire.
Yeah,
inside.
But he doesn't know. He has no. So that's what I'm saying, is, like, it's a slow poison when you don't vocalize that.
Yeah.
This really contributes, like, it needs to stop for our mental health. Like, this needs to be a selfish reason that you stop doing that, because we can't do that to ourselves anymore. This is insanity.
Right. Yeah.
And then, of course, it affects your marriage in really positive ways, too, when you stop.
Absolutely. And your sons and daughters.
Yes.
Everyone will be better off for it. So, you close out really this essay. I'm calling it an essay. I know you call it a post, I think is what you've said, but I think it's an essay.
Okay. That's because I don't know how to self-edit, so everything's like long-form essays.
That's true. It's definitely a long-form piece, but it's every word. I wouldn't change a thing. But you end by saying that basically your mantra for marriage is, it will be hard, but it will be worth it. And I think this is just a universal truth.
In everything.
In everything.
Yes. Yeah. Marriage, parenting, podcasting, friendships, pet care. Literally everything will be hard, but it will be worth it. And, you know, I say in the post or the essay, but I just want to say it again.
The
long form essay. If you've been married for a long time or with someone for a long time and you got a divorce, we get it. Mm-hmm. We get it because it's so hard. We completely understand. And just like we've said in the past 30 minutes, whatever's true to you, like nobody gets to comment on that, right? If you got divorced, it doesn't mean you don't know how to do hard. It doesn't mean you gave up. No one gets to say and whether that's true because no one knows your specific marriage, right?
Yeah, so it's certainly not, because if you didn't sit down and journal every 2 weeks, like we're not saying that at all.
This is not a prescription.
No.
Really. Yeah. And I mean, I think that's just it. Like, we want you to hear this podcast and read that essay knowing it's nothing more than us saying, like, we see you and we get it.
Yeah, absolutely. We see you. Tessie, this is a perfect opportunity to do a marriage edition of one of our favorite segments. Mm-hmm. Usually this focuses on parenthood and motherhood or just general shenanigans, but let's try to come up with some specific things that have to do with marriage, things that we should probably feel guilty about, but don't.
Okay, so I feel like you are prepared for this. You go.
Okay, well, this is just a quick story. It requires a little bit of background.
Okay.
When Jake and I first were married, we got married in December. His birthday came in June. And I celebrated the only way I really knew how, which was by getting up at 5 in the morning, baking a cake from a box probably, but with like M&Ms and candy all over the frosting. And then I'm a very literal person. He was turning 24 years old, and so I put 24 candles on it. I lit them all, and I walked back to our bedroom where he was sleeping with his eye patch on and was like, good morning, it's your birthday. And he took off his eye patch and was nearly blinded by all the fire. And he was like upset with me. He was a little bit just like, this isn't really how I do birthdays. Like, I'm pretty laid back and like low key. And, you know, I was really like embarrassed, kind of. I was just like, oh, like it was like I just loved too much. Like, I just loved too hard, too much. And like, he just wasn't ready to receive it. So I felt really bad. Not at 6 in the morning. But now I have tried to understand him better. I understand what he wants and needs for his birthday, and it's usually like a good meal and a glass of like a martini by himself, like, with me not even in the room. So whatever, it's fine. But what I don't feel guilty about anymore, like I did that morning, was loving him too much.
Yeah, nope.
Like, I don't feel guilty. I'm going to do my best on his birthday in his own special way.
Yep.
You know, I'm going to show that love, and I don't feel guilty.
Good.
He can try to stop that birthday joy, but I am going to keep pouring it on. I don't feel guilty.
You should not. You should not feel at all guilty about that. We don't have a dresser. In our last house, we had a huge walk-in closet, so we just never needed one. But now we have a small closet.
Mm-hmm.
In theory, we probably need a dresser, but we don't want to take up too much space. Whatever.
Okay,
it's our thing.
I get it.
Okay. Zach's workout clothes are currently on a pile in the floor. Just a pile. And it is. It's one of those things where, like, it started to, it's a slow drip. It's a slow drip where I'm like, what's going on here? What's going on? So I finally, like, poisoned. So I went in at Target. Instead of buying a dresser like a normal human, I bought him a laundry hamper that had, like, three different segments for him to put his clothes in. I was just like, socks, pants, shirts, done. And I probably should feel guilty because, like, I think adults need a dresser, maybe. And it probably made more sense. But I knew inside he doesn't care. He doesn't care if he has a dresser. And it was $10 compared to over $100. So you know what? I don't feel guilty.
You shouldn't. I think you're darn smart is what you are. That warrants no guilt. Don't feel guilty about that. Okay. I don't care that you're mid-30s and don't have a dresser.
Okay, thank you.
But I do love it when you talk about design. You know that. I love decor and design. And so that actually brings me to, I think I can relate to you a little bit because we, in a similar vein, we don't have a bed frame.
True.
And I think that, like you, I always thought that by the time you reach a certain age, you would have, like, a full set, like a dresser. Like, we do have a dresser.
You do.
But we don't have a bed frame. So our mattress, our box springs and our mattress just sit on the floor. And I don't know. Like, I don't really feel guilty about it. I don't feel like a failure. I don't know. Maybe some people would disagree that, like, I should take a little more pride in our boudoir. But I don't feel guilty.
You don't? Do you feel guilty about the kitchen couch yet?
Nope. That I probably should feel guilty about.
But you don't, so.
And it is a bit of a divide in our marriage. Speaking of marriage.
But you don't. Nope. You don't feel guilty about it. Nope. Okay. When we were first dating, Zach and I, like many angsty teens.
Teenagers, babies.
I wouldn't eat much in front of him, right? Mm. But we went out to eat the other day, and almost absentmindedly, he grabbed the fourth out of six falafels. I know. I was like, no. That's actually my half of the appetizer, good sir. And, you know, I should probably feel guilty, because who doesn't want falafel? But I want falafel, so I don't feel guilty. Like, I get three of those six, you get the other three.
It's a partnership. It's an equal partnership. It's an equal partnership. I don't think you should feel guilty about that.
So, listeners, we would love to hear yours. Like, what are your, if you sat down and had this, created this space, right? Like, what are you seeing? What are you hearing? What's coming up? Mm-hmm. What do you love? What are you celebrating? And also, what should you feel guilty about but don't?
And what would your partner should feel guilty about? Yeah. So I'm going to have to ask Jake, what should I feel guilty about, actually?
But I clearly don't. Number one, kitchen couch. That's what would happen. All right, let's do the dare. So today, Mama Bears, we dare you to take a quiet few moments and just reflect on your partnership. If you're not married, then think about your most trusted member of your tribe. Think about how far you have come from where you started. Compare what initially drew you to that person to what currently leaves you breathless about them. And just like we've encouraged you to celebrate the small stuff, let's do that now, right? You notice this with other moms and other women. We dare you to do the same with your partner. Does she scrape your windshields in the winter before you go to work? Does he always program the coffee maker so that it's ready for you as you wake up? These little things in a marriage amount to big things, but we are too often consumed with the mundane to realize these moments when our partner is thinking only of us and our little secret pleasures that only they know. Whether you've been together for 2 years, 14 years, or 60 years, seriously, congratulations, tell us everything. Today, we just dare you to give your partner a high five and acknowledge that it's been hard, but it's been worth it. Look around and see what your partnership has done to the world. Maybe it's created other humans. Maybe it's rescued a handful of pets. Maybe it's built a business or a much-needed nonprofit answering the world's greatest needs. Whatever it is, it's a really big freaking deal, and we just want to congratulate you on doing it. Listeners, as old wives, trust us on this. There is love, and then there is more love. Dare to take a second to appreciate small things your partner does for you and verbally tell them, and then watch the love ripple out and cover you both.
Oh, I love that. That's so beautiful and such a great essay, Tessie. I'm so glad you wrote it, that you took the time to do that, and then you posted it and shared it with others. So, Mama Bears, follow us. You'll find more of Tessie's posts and a few of mine sometimes
when I can get her to post something.
On social media, we are on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat. We have a website with an email address. Our email is mamabeardares@gmail.com, and we'd love to hear from you. So tell us what you're thinking, either on the social media channels or through an email. We love to hear from this community, this growing community of mama bears. So make sure you subscribe to us on iTunes or Stitcher, wherever you get your podcasts. You'll find us there. Subscribe, rate us, give us a review. Just send us some love. We really appreciate that. And until Monday, have a great week.
Have a great week.